Let me begin. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Saksur Unmulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasade Gaur Vaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from the road. Raghunath and myself had a retreat. A beautiful retreat center about 50 minutes from my place, 600 acres, they can host 600 people. We were the only group there, about 30 people, maybe some other group, but really amazing. And I met the owner of it. She spent a lot of time with me, and just some Chinese housewife that had nothing to do. My husband has a business in Long Island and spends $6 million for the property and then $19 million to fix it up. And it was great for the retreat, beautiful. Built in the late 1900s and beautiful accommodations, and it was really nice. And Henry, one of our main Sangha members, came up for the weekend in, nothing you can do, this car's kind of noisy, huh? Yeah, sorry. Yeah, and Henry came up for the week, which was really nice, because Satsrupa Maharaj was having his biannual program. A lot of nice senior devotees were up, and it was beautiful too. I was able to go for an hour into the morning, the first morning of the retreat. Satsrupa Maharaj has been extremely ill. I mean, not seeing anybody, and somehow he mustered up all his energy to come to the retreat. And Henry and myself were commenting how beautiful his little talk was. Real guru. You know, just, I like to call it a dragnet speech, but some of you won't. There was a detective show we watched when we were young where the detective is just the facts. He's guru, he's representing Prabhupada, who gave the holy name. You know, and his business is to get the holy name, and the retreat would be about the holy name. And unfortunately, I had to go before Ram Roy was chanting, and Satsrupa Maharaj, because, you know, he was one of the first gurus, his disciples are in their 60s. So a lot of mature, really deep people. So that was really great. So on my 50-minute ride back, I'm going to... Right now, I've taken the tact, and it seems to have been working, that I'll just share with you any of the thoughts and ideas that I have, and try to present them. And there's one thing I was really thinking, and I think it's a very, very interesting point. In fact, I do want to write about it. I gave class in the Bhakti Center about the story of Dhritarasura. Dhritarasura, so he was a great demon. So I was at the beginning of one chapter. The previous chapter is he wasn't afraid of death. He was fearless. He intuitively understood that everything was God's will, and that if he did his duty in the battle, he would, you know, go back to God. And he was even preaching to Indra, who was a devotee, and becoming a little bit apprehensive of his duty to fight. So, and Vritrasura's prayers, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, outside of the 10th canto, they're the most rich and devotional prayers. Of course, I remember one of them, of course, Narayana Parasarbe, one who is Narayana Parayana, one who really, Narayana Parayana is not an ordinary term. You can be a devotee, but not Narayana Parayana. Narayana Parayana means a devotee who God is, Krishna is really their life and soul. And we know who those devotees are. Narayana Parayana, Nikuta Vibhuti, Swaga Pavaga Narakesha, and such devotees, and this is prayers from Vritrasura, and such devotees, they don't care whether it's hell, heaven, Swaga, Pavaga, the earth planet, Vaisheshika Brahmin, a wonderful class in the Bhakti Center, gave the point that Bhakti is more about being than having. And having means what your environment is. It's more about being. What your consciousness is in any situation that God puts you. And therefore, you become beyond duality in relationship to the world around you. That's why it says, in life or death. There was actually some verses like that about Vritrasura. He didn't care. In life or death. And what a contrast between life and death, and how many people can be beyond duality in life and death. Marge Prickett was beyond duality in life and death. Because when he was cursed to die, Sadhu Mene, I think this is good. I will become free from my attachments. I'll become free from the sinful reactions for the things I'm doing. And that's why the reaction is coming of death, because of what I did. And the burden of my sins will not go to my family. Sadhu Mene, I think that is good. And Prabhupada, when he said, what is death but another birthday? How many persons would rather be at their celebrating their birthday or their death? But self-realized soul is sober. He's not bewildered by such a change. And you know, it's a recurring theme, but it's the basis of our philosophy. We have to practice this, otherwise we will be so disturbed at the moment of death. We have to practice this in all our little tribulations in the world, how things don't move our way. We have to learn how to be martra sparshasta konteya, sitoshna sukha dukkha, agama payano, and the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress, and their disappearance in due course of time is like the changing of the summer and winter season. He tolerates this. So there's so much, even what's a liberated soul, it's not that happiness and distress doesn't come to the liberated soul. He's just not affected by it. Happiness, I feel great today. My health, distress, I'm sick. Happiness, you know, the bank account went up. Distress, I've lost it. Happiness, everyone is jai, jai, jai. Distress, everyone's at my throat, throat, throat. So this kind of, and so they saw Vritrasura in that consciousness. it's so beautiful to see someone in that consciousness. It's so, so glorious. I'm thinking of our, my godbrother, Korma Rupa Prabhu. When he found out that he was to die, you know, he had stage 4 cancer, they opened up, he said, take me back to my cows. Right? It's just another, he was equal. I mean, I'm sure if he had a choice, okay, I wish the disease would go, or, but he wasn't, he was tolerant. He was tolerant of this. So it's such a beautiful thing when someone is not swayed by the changes in the world. And someone is not changed, is bewildered by the changes in the world or practices that will not be bewildered at the moment of death. Death is an important thing. The whole Bhagavatam is based on the question, what is the duty of a man who's about to die? What should he not do? And what is the answer? If you want to be fearless at the... That's such a goal. That is such a goal, to be fearless at the time of death. That's such a goal. Because this is our future. What are we doing about it? It's our future. And how to become fearless. It's not just a momentary snap of the consciousness. It's a whole bhav, mood, realizations in life. Fearless means why? Because you have realized the eternal soul. And you are living there even while within the body. How? By serving. By surrendering to Guru and Krishna. You are on the liberated platform if you actually can do that. If you can actually commit yourself to follow the truth in your heart and surrender to that truth, then ihayasya harer dasye karmana manasa gira nikalas tu avaptasu jivan mukta sajit. One who is a servant of Krishna, ihayasya harer karmana manasa gira, in one's work, mind, words. Jivan mukta. So he is called one who is liberated even in this body. So anyway, Marge Prickett is hearing this story and he raises a doubt. And that's the duty of someone who wants to learn, to admit when they don't understand things and seek further clarification. So he has a doubt, not in his guru, but he has a doubt in his understanding of his guru's words. And he wants it reconciled. And what is the contradiction? The greatest devotee is a demon. And that is really difficult to understand. And sometimes what the Shastra illustrates is a truth in its most trying application. Because to understand a truth in its most trying application, you have to understand that truth in the limits of its depth. And that we see there in Bhagavad Gita. What is the truth? The truth in the Bhagavad Gita is that what is spiritual is not the activity, but the consciousness in which it is done. Although certain activities are more closely associated with material activities, still, there is not an absolute correlation between an activity and, but between an activity you do and whether or not it's material or whether that activity is material. And the classic example is war. War is hell. I think we're very much protected here in America. We didn't have to go through that, at least in our generation. My father was in World War II. My uncles were in World War II. My uncle was a fighter pilot in Europe. My father was stationed in Hawaii. They call that the greatest generation. That's the greatest generation. They had real life. They had to put themselves they had to put themselves on the line for a truth higher than their own individual desire. And that's healthy. If the truth is worthy of that sacrifice, it's healthy. And it creates character. My generation, the next generation, is called the me generation. The generation which doesn't understand duty above self. It doesn't understand duty above self. Of course, we're making generalizations, but generalizations also have some value. So, the Bhagavad Gita. So, when you have situations like that, they're presented to deepen your understanding. Because that's what realization is. Realization is a communication of truth, Prabhupada said. I always give this point. When someone has realization, they can reform the language of what they've learned, the truth that they've learned, the language in which they've learned a truth, they can communicate it in another way to accommodate the language or frame of reference of another person. And if you don't have realization, you either to communicate it, you lose the essence of the truth, or you keep it in a way in which the language you're presenting it is not understood. But here's another thing of realization. You can see the truth in a different language. And it really tests your realization to have to do that. And therefore, the Bhagavad Gita, right off the bat, is really pushing us and testing our realization or trying to give us a realization. What is spiritual? Well, Arjuna has to fight in a war. And not only does he have to fight in a war, but his family, his guru, is on the other side. And Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is telling him to fight. So if you can understand that, you'll understand deeply the concept of what is spiritual. And therefore, when you understand that concept deeply, you'll be able to apply it in your life. So here's another circumstance. It's a demon. And he's the greatest devotee. And if you can understand what makes that demon, Vritrasura, the greatest devotee, then you'll really understand what it means to be a devotee, and you can actually apply it to your life. And in that chapter, what happens, which is very interesting in that chapter, Marge Prickett is explaining why his inquiry, because a devotee is at the top rung of the yoga ladder. Really, what a devotee, and there's verses in the Gita, Bahunam Janmanamante, Ganavam Mampapadyate, Vasudeva Savamiti, Samahatma Sadulava. Bahunam, Janmanam, many, many births. Bahunam, Janmanam, Gyanavam, Mabhapadyate. When one who is a Gyani, many, many births as a Gyani, Vasudeve Sabha, Bahunam, Janmanam, Ante, Gyanavam, Mabhapadyate, Vasudeva Samahatma Sadhula. It's so rare to get someone who sees that God is everywhere. And not only when you see God everywhere, you feel God everywhere. Because we have a relationship with God. We're feeling, Prabhupada said, thrilled at every moment. That prema, bhakti, Another one is Brahma Bhuta Pasanatma Nasochati Nakanchati Samasarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhokta Labhati Parim. Brahma Bhuta, the liberated platform. Brahma Bhuta Pasanatma, full with joy. Brahma Bhuta Pasanatma Nasochati Nakanchati, no more hankering and lamenting. Samasarveshu Bhuteshu sees everyone equally. Madbhakta, that person becomes a devotee. So this is the apex of spiritual evolution. So how can that person who is a demon be such a devotee? If you understand that, you can understand what a devotee is. And what you understand, the first thing you have to understand, although there is a correlation between one's spiritual evolution and his level of renunciation, one's birth, we don't denigrate birth because we believe in the law of karma. Someone is born in a very Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brashna Pajayate. Yoga, when a yogi does not complete, where does he get born? Srimatam Suchinam, an aristocratic family, Suchinam, a Brahmin family, Kshatriya family, a Brahmin family. So there's a correlation with these things, with one's level of renunciation is spiritual. And even that point is so difficult to understand, too. Because it's not an absolute correlation, but it's not that there's no correlation. We quoted, when I gave my class, we quoted from the Chaitanya Charitamrita that says that, you know, the symptom of the devotees of Mahaprabhu is their renunciation from the world. So there's all these verses that glorify things, yet it's not an absolute correlation that a person with karma or jnana sukriti, or a person who doesn't have karma or jnana sukriti, can't be a devotee. Because there's different types of sukriti. There's karma sukriti, by which you get your material things. There's jnana sukriti, by which you get renunciation of the world. And there's bhakti sukriti, by which you get devotion in the heart. So someone can have bhakti sukriti and not have jnana sukriti or karma sukriti. And we see it sometimes. I give the example. I have one of my godbrothers. He's in the Boston Temple. He has severe mental disease. Almost like schizophrenia, severe mental disease. He's not in the Boston Temple. He lives outside. That's not karma sukriti. That's bad. That's not good. That's not sukriti. That's not good karma. And he can't function without heavy, heavy drugs. And he can't get up until 4 p.m. But every single day for the last 30 years, he comes humbly to the Boston Temple and cleans it from top to bottom with such attention to detail, and always serves humbly the Vaishnavas that come. There's not a correlation there, absolute correlation. He has a lot of bhakti, but the karma sukriti is not so evolved. So we often see that. We often see those circumstances arise. Therefore, I always quote this, and I think it's an extremely, extremely important point to understand in our own dealings. And I got this, I was reading one book by Prabhupada's godbrother, Bhakti Rakshaka Sridhar Maharaj, his wonderful Vaishnav scholar. And he made a point to distinguish between ordinary dealings and one's inspired side. Now, it doesn't mean that a devotee acts improperly. But it means that bhakti is independent of karma and jnana, where jnana and karma are dependent on bhakti. 1 second, we're going to the toll booth here.
Thank you very much.
Every other path is dependent on bhakti, and bhakti is not dependent on any other path. If you want to perfect jnana, you have to do worship. You need mercy to actually achieve that level of determination. Same thing with karma. If you want material fruit, you have to worship. But bhakti is independent of karma and jnana. So one could have, but if one gets bhakti, then quickly you will get jnana. Quickly you will get an understanding of, and you'll become renounced. Great devotees become renounced, not necessarily from objects, because objects can be used in Krishna's service. But they come renounced from the sense of possessiveness of those objects. So very quickly a devotee can become renounced. And I was explaining this in the class. I'm sorry if, you know, we're on the highway and it may be a little noise. I am speaking loudly. Henry's great driver, driving as careful as he can to facilitate but it's one of those. So I was mentioning, this is an interesting point about Raganuga Bhakti. This Prabhupada stresses the point that you really have to be free from anartha nivritti, from unwanted things. How can you occupy your consciousness with Radha and Krishna when you're so attached to the material world? The commentaries explain that rag, that feeling of deep possessive love for Radha and Krishna, can come at any time. So how do you reconcile the two? That it could come at any time. It just doesn't come as you become involved in renunciation. It can come at any time. But I found a verse in the Bhagavatam that says, when you do get that, you'll be quickly advanced. So when you see someone in spontaneous devotional service, so-called Radhe Radhe, love for Krishna, they should also be detached from the world. But they may not start detached from the world. Is that verse, Vasudeva, Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga, Piyojita, Chaniyat Yasu Vairagyam, Gyanachiyad, Ahaitakam? It says that one executes Bhakti Yoga, one becomes easily renounced. It means, where again, he will have to study Sankhya very, very deeply. He'll have to analyze the world and no. He'll have to practice renunciation very, very strictly. The bhakti doesn't have to do that. Just hearing a little bit. Loving Krishna. Vishyavani Bhartante. Nirahadasya Dehana, Vasorajam Vasopyasya, Param Drishvana Vartate. Hearing a little bit, they'll become renounced. Because the real renunciation in bhakti is our strong objective, our strong desire to meet an objective of love of Krishna. So that's the real inspiration to renunciation. Your greed for your relationship with Krishna. And greed means beg, borrow, or steal. So when you actually have real bhakti in your heart, beg, borrow, or steal, or give up whatever you have to, you give up whatever is anartha, that has no value to your objective. Of course, in bhakti, there are things that have value to our objective, even to pacify our mind. Okay, we have to cross a truck, so we're putting on the gas. Okay. So, there's really not this absolute correlation, although there is a correlation, but it's not an absolute correlation. And there's one verse in the Bhagavatam that says, Parashana Babu. Anyway, it says, just as when one gets food, three things are accomplished. One gets some relish, one gets some satisfaction, and one gets freedom from the pain of hunger. Simultaneously, in the same way, when one gets bhakti, then devotion, renunciation, and realization simultaneously rise at the same time. So if you have someone with bhakti, but he doesn't have renunciation, then he is sahajya. He's taking it very cheaply. It's not real. Because when you have real devotion and that becomes your goal, then you lose interest in things that have no value to your goal, if you really have bhakti. And if you have renunciation, you see a devotee, he's very renounced, but he doesn't have much devotion, then the danger is he's contaminated by jnana or impersonalism. So these things rise generally at the same time, but still there's no absolute correlation. So we have the story of Vritrasura, or even that verse, Apichet Siddharacharo, Pajate Mamananyabak, Sidure Vasamantavya. Even if one commits something very abominable, Sadur Eva Samantavya, he's considered a sadhu. Brahmatirtha Prabhu told me that this is the first verse he was meeting Prabhupada in the Peace Corps when he was in India. This was the first question, the first verse he asked about this verse to Prabhupada, and it was the last verse Prabhupada explained to him. How can it be? Api chet siddharacharo bhajate mam ananyabhak. If someone is so sinful, abominable, sadur eva samantavya, he's considered a sadhu. Bhajate mam ananyabhak. If he's fixed in devotion. This is so important. Shipram Bhavit, and very quickly, because very quickly he'll become righteous by the power of devotion. It's your sincerity at heart. And therefore, in our dealings with each other, we have to be very, very careful not just to judge people externally based the construction of our false ego or a certain moralistic that we have. I said in one very commentary in the Bhagavatam, he's and is doing the exact same activities as a karmi. We don't see them as the same because of rasagraha. Rasagraha means there's something in that heart that he's tasted. It may be covered, and then it'll manifest again. And we see that. We see so many senior devotees just coming back. And if you criticize them at their weak point, you will get credit for the offense when they get advanced. That's there in this story of Dhruv Maharaj's brother. I think his name was Uttama or something. Yeah. As a devotee, he's not practicing anymore. He's fallen away. He has sensual problems. If you judge him too harshly, you'll get the offense of dealing with someone who... You'll be judged yourself on the rasa graha. The rasa graha, that taste that he has in the heart. And that's how we come to Krishna consciousness. And it's indelible, it stays. It can be covered, but it stays. That experience of the Bhakti Lata Beach, that sublimity, that trust. Even if one can't do that, the conception or idea that serving Krishna is the best thing. Anyway, this was kind of my attempt. I am very dedicated to the Sunday Sanghas. I think I've kept them up. Henry asked me, I think it may be 12 years now. There may have been at least, the Bhagavatam, there must be over 600 Bhagavatam classes I've given. So even though I have to be on the road, I'm very happy to give it. If anyone likes to ask any questions, I still have about...
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
And Gail, can I ask you, I got that invitation, but what time is it? It doesn't say the time on the invitation.
It's actually right in the smack dab in the middle of the invitation. It says 11 o'clock.
And that's, 11 o'clock. Okay.
Yeah, that's like, right. Like a brunch thing, and then the ceremony won't begin until like a little after 12. So.
Oh, the ceremony is not till 12. Oh.
Yeah, well, close to 12:30.
Okay.
But, you know, in the beginning it's just brunch, you know. But it's there in the invitation.
Okay. Now, what is your question now that you answered my important question?
Okay, my question also has to do with food. Because I'm referring to your analogy about bhakti. When you said that,
yeah,
I recognize it. first, the pangs of the pain of hunger goes, then
simultaneously, when you eat,
mm-hmm.
the pain of hunger goes.
Mm-hmm.
You're satisfied, and then there's taste.
Yeah. So.
And we're,
so.
Yeah.
In the first stage, the pangs of hunger goes, but you're still not satisfied.
No, and automatically.
So,
they come simultaneously. As soon as you eat, the pangs of hunger are gone, you're feeling okay, and you're relishing the taste of the food at the same time. They happen simultaneously.
Yeah, well, I mean, for the purpose of understanding the actual point, I just want to understand the analogy better. So I wanted to differentiate between satisfaction and the pangs of hunger going.
Yeah, there's pain. Like, let's say right now you feel healthy, right? You just feel good, right? Sometimes, our body just feels good. And then there's pain. So the pain goes. There's no pain. Like right now, for example, I may not have pain, but I may feel like my body is good. I feel satisfaction. I feel normal. There's a certain feeling of being normal. Everything's functioning. So when you eat the food, the pain goes, but you also feel normal.
Okay. And then beyond that, you're actually relishing.
There's a taste. It's sweet, it's pungent, it's sour, it's salty, it's mixed together.
Okay, so now back to bhakti,
Yeah.
the three things that arise simultaneously, can you repeat?
Bhakti Pareshanu Bhava Viraktir. Viraktir means renunciation from the world. Bhakti means feelings of devotion. And I think Anubhav, Pareshanubhav means realization. You're actually understanding things. You understand God.
So the one that is analogous to the pain of hunger.
I never said that they were analogous. What the analogy is that three things happen at once.
Oh,
both
okay.
For eating and for food. That's the analogy.
Mm-hmm.
Three things rise simultaneously along each other.
And that's realization, renunciation, and the joy of devotional
and
service.
And devotion. Yeah, devotion.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about realization of yeah, I guess realizing Krishna and realizing Krishna in various forms.
Yeah, yeah.
Various ways. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Mm-hmm. Anybody like to say hello? We got it's 9:56. We have 8 minutes before I'm at my destiny. Anybody have
any questions? By the way, your class has been completely noise-free, by the way.
My class was noise-free. That's by the mercy of my driver, Krishna. I mean, Henry.
Yeah, no,
he's instructing me.
Not a drop of noise at all. Not a drop of noise.
Henry's instructing me while I'm giving foot. Wow, that's like a paradise. Noise everywhere, but not a drop to hear.
Yeah. I know.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Chaitanya Priya. Haribo.
Hi, Bo. Good. Thank you. Anybody else? Say hello.
Thank you for great
Hi, Krishna Sumaraj.
It's Kishori and who?
Priya.
Not Priya is there?
Yeah.
Yes? Okay, good. Who else?
Hey, Krishna Maharaj.
It's Janine.
Okay, try one at a time.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. It's Janine.
Janine? Regular. Thank you so much. Who else?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. This is Lee.
Lee, you're steady now on this. That's so great. Community's growing. Who else? Okay, then I'm going to kind of wind up, but I'll be up here, and then Thursday I'll go in. Friday is the big day.
Hare Krishna,
Guru Maharaj. Haribo. And then Saturday I'll head to Moscow. Hare Krishna.